Okay, so fucking Picard season three. What the fuck?
Oh, my Lord. Dude, I was on the edge of my seat the whole time. It didn't feel like a season. It felt like a movie.
Oh, yeah.
That's how well written it was.
Oh, no, I agree. Like, this reminded me of some of, like, those older Star Trek movies.
Yeah.
And Jesus Christ, the quality of it was, like, I did not expect it to be this good.
No, I didn't either. I was completely shocked.
It felt like I was watching a completely different show. Like, okay, season one felt like a bad Mass Effect plot. Okay, I don't know if you ever played the Mass Effect games.
No, I actually haven't, but I've been told they're very good.
They are indeed very good. But Christ almighty, like the first one was like, oh, versus AI, versus this, and like felt like a Mass Effect plot. Season two, I could squish all of season two into about an hour.
Yeah, this is about right.
Yeah. And that's about it. Like season two is like really nothing impressive at all. But season three, geez, where was this whole time?
I don't know. I had to say, if anybody had taken the episodes and did a fan edit of this and said, okay, this is Star Trek Next Generation's lost movie, Star Trek The Last Generation, the movie.
Yeah, because this one ties in very well to all like the themes of Star Trek. Like, it brings in some stuff from DS9, it brings in some stuff from Voyager, and it really finishes off some plots that were established in both, like the Borg, the Changeling. I was like, flabbergasted, honestly, just flabbergasted. Yeah.
It was interesting to have a Changeling and Borg alliance because they both have their beefs against the Federation. I was like, okay, this makes sense. But I never anticipated it was actually going to be the Borg as the main villains. I thought it was just going to be the Changelings.
Yeah. Well, the Borg made more sense, in my opinion, yeah, for something that's Star Trek related, or especially the Next Generation. And especially that focuses on Picard, you know?
Yeah, it was quite crazy to find out that the Borg really never let him go, like Data had said.
It's not even a question of ever letting him go. It's that even them, they didn't know that was happening. That was like more of a mutation. So why don't you run us through the plot of this season, Ian?
Okay, absolutely. With pleasure. Season three starts with Picard actually getting a distress call from a very old friend, Beverly Crusher, the former doctor of the Enterprise. A woman he hasn't spoken to, another crew has spoken to in over 20 years.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yes. So he contacts Will Riker, his former first officer and, of course, captain of the Titan, for help. And they managed to locate Beverly's ship outside Federation space. But Picard remembers her words in the distress signal, "No Starfleet, trust no one." So what does Will Riker actually suggest to do? Kind of a Federation starship to go near that outside Federation space to try to find out what's happened to Beverly. And what's the ship? The USS Titan. Commanded by Captain Liam Shaw. Bit of a hard ass.
I mean, I get it, but he has the right to be.
Yeah. But who is the first officer? Seven of Nine. I have to say, their relationship, Picard and Seven, over the season is pretty good because she does call him a friend in the first episode.
Oh, yeah, no, definitely. That made a lot of sense after everything they've been through. And, like, you know, they're both former, they were both assimilated at some point. So they have that connection as well. they have that understanding with each other, and they've both been in some way or form disillusioned a bit by Starfleet.
Yeah. So, after Shaw tells Picard and Riker, no, we can't go into this section, Seven actually takes the Titan without Shaw knowing it. So Picard and Riker actually take a shuttlecraft and go to Beverly's ship. When they get there, they find she's not alone. And who is protecting her? Her son, Jack Crusher.
Dun, dun, dun.
That's right. Beverly had another son. But before they could question anything, they came under attack by an unknown ship.
The Shriek. I gotta admit, the Shriek and that entire plot with it was really good. Like, the villains this season were relentless. Like, you really felt on the edge of your seat with them.
Yeah, Vadic, played by Amanda Plummer, did a tremendous job because she liked to toy with her victims, and gleeful, but she was menacing. She was unrelentless and she was unstoppable. And I will say this, she was after Jack Crusher for a very specific reason. And if you guys hadn't seen Picard yet, you gotta get a spoiler. He's actually Picard's son.
Mm-hmm. So the plot in this season is that, you find out something is going on behind the scenes. It's called Frontier Day. And they're gonna be bringing together the entire Federation fleet in one place, despite everyone clamoring how bad of an idea it is. Because what's been going on? We have changeling infiltrators at the highest level of Starfleet.
Yes. Now, some of you may ask, will this include some of the biggest names like Janeway? Well, we never actually saw Janeway in this season. We actually heard about her. They talked about her, but we never saw her. So we don't know.
I am curious as why the actress would not want to come in, because she has been providing voiceover for Star Trek Prodigy.
Well, I don't know. I guess they just didn't have enough time to really fit everything into the story. Who knows?
Yeah, but instead we did get to see Tuvok, and we do find out that these particular changelings can completely hide all screenings. Like, unlike DS9 changelings, they're not that easy to spot.
Yeah, they can hold the physical form. Mm-hmm.
And don't appear on sensors and pass blood screenings. We find out because, Starfleet did some experimentation on the changelings and accidentally created a more deadly variant at the cost of most of their lifespan. In exchange, they can hide under everything. They could also pass it along. So it makes it interesting because what this does, like, changelings are like nigh immortal, more or less. But doing this only cuts them down to a tenth of their lifespan. So they live to about 100 or so years. So they would have like a general human longevity.
And who, you may ask, authorized these experimentations?
Section 31.
Yes, our good old friends at Section 31.
Who seem to be not the biggest secret anymore.
No, they're not, because Vadic had broken into their facility, which was Daystrom Station.
It's not just...
go ahead.
It's not just that, but we've made it very clear that Section 31 has always been very underground, to the point where even career officers have never heard of it. Like, you probably have... I wouldn't be surprised if Jean-Luc only heard about Section 31 recently, because he was always a pretty by-the-books kind of captain.
Yeah.
But, like, most people never heard of Section 31 until the war with the Dominion, because you never needed to hear about them. So it seems like whatever happened with Section 31 and the Dominion War has made them more common knowledge, because even the Obsidian Order on Cardassia had never heard of them.
Yeah.
but it could also be a writing thing where people are taking them more common knowledge now.
Yeah. What's interesting, though, is they actually have some of the most interesting things at Daystrom Station. I'll give you an example. They have a tribble that it has a huge biting situation, which means they mutated a tribble. But not only that, they actually are holding the remains of James T. Kirk.
I actually read that. And I read what the director, his intention was for that. One, it's not that he wanted to do something with Kirk in his series. Yeah. He wanted to allow other writers to be able to do something with Kirk in theirs. Because the argument is, and it's the same argument they have later in the season with the Enterprise D, is that you can't just leave that where it is. So like Kirk's body was buried on some random planet for anyone to basically find. So it's like, yeah, we can't just leave that here. That has to be, we can't just leave that in this system. Who knows who will find it, and Prime Directive. So we have to go back and get it.
Yeah, they also had to explain how one of the most celebrated Starfleet captains in Starfleet reported had died 80 years. How did he possibly have turned up on Viridian 3? They had to explain that.
Or not explain it.
Yes.
But overall, yeah, that place was full of Easter eggs. And it's always nice seeing, like, because we only ever heard of Tribbles in, I think, DS9?
Yeah.
In the recent history. So it's like seeing, like, Worf react to them. The enemy of the Empire.
Yeah.
I think the story with Tribbles was that they're such a ravenous species, it would eat the Klingons' entire food supplies.
Yeah. Okay, so we've got into that, but what's also there, Daystrom, which is actually the manifest of what Vag had stole from Daystrom, is Data.
Well, or Data was the manifest, not what was stolen.
Yes, not to be confused. We find out what actually Vag had stolen from Daystrom. It was actually Jean-Luc Picard's body.
Mm-hmm. Because in season one, Jean-Luc had his consciousness transferred onto a body similar to what Data has now.
Yes.
So it's like it's 100% a human body, but with a positronic brain. So the reason why the changelings wanted Picard was because Picard had a disease in season one. And I'm pretty sure a lot of this is retroactive. This was not planned.
Yeah.
Apparently, they thought it was a very specific disease and he was dying from it, so which is why he had to transfer his consciousness over. But the truth is, it wasn't a disease. It was a long-term side effect of being assimilated. So there was something that was growing in Picard, something that was mutating. And that same mutation killed him, but long ago he had passed it on to his son, and his son was able to perfect it.
Yeah.
So what the changelings did, and this entire plan was kind of amazing.
Yeah.
The changelings stole the body of Jean-Luc Picard and took the biological Borg adaptation, a genetic trait, and infiltrated Starfleet in order to insert that into all the transporters. So every time somebody used a transporter, they were being assimilated.
Without them even knowing it.
Yeah. They were inserting this Borg frequency into their genetic code because Jack had the ability to control people with that frequency. Only if they were under the age of 25, so to speak, or young adults.
Yeah, which is why some of the older crew members were not affected.
Mm-hmm. So, and during the whole process of everything going on, the original TNG cast all get back together just in time to see Starfleet being completely decimated.
Yes, what was interesting about Frontier Day in particular, before every ship got assimilated, was seeing the Enterprise F, which was going on, I suppose, you know, her grand finale tour, because she was about to be decommissioned. And who was commanding Enterprise F? Admiral Elizabeth Shelby. Many of you probably know her or recognize her from the two-part episode, The Best of Both Worlds, in seasons 3 and 4 of Next Generation.
Yeah, and she was in season 1 of Picard, I believe, wasn't she?
No, she actually wasn't in season 1 of Picard.
Oh, I thought she was the one who told Picard to fuck off. Or that.
No, that wasn't her.
Okay, yeah, that was probably somebody else.
Yeah.
But yeah, and of course, what happens to Shelby? She gets shot by her own crew.
What I found interesting, and this was actually remarked by Picard himself, was just the ship's formation. So it was very ironic that Shelby would actually say yes to a very Borg-like, you know, plan.
Yeah, that's why part of me was thinking like, oh, that might be might not be Shelby. It might be a changeling.
Oh,
for all we know, it was. If they ever want to bring Shelby back, you know, just like, oh yeah, that really wasn't Shelby. That was a changeling on the bridge.
That could happen.
Yeah. And because even when one of the changelings died, it didn't revert. It stayed as a...
Yeah.
So there's always that. Like, I love that we can do that now in, like, Star Trek. It's like, oh, that wasn't really Shelby. That was a changeling pretending to be Shelby.
As a great Vulcan once said, there are always possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And, yeah. And like, just to, like, speed run this.
Yeah.
Seeing the entire, like... Starfleet being assimilated by the Borg, like, because the Borg lost their entire army, they lost everything because of Starfleet, so their response is like, we're gonna take everything from Starfleet. And it's just the coldness, and like, you know, the Borg have always felt cold and detached and logical.
Yeah,
but when you see the Borg Queen, you realize they're not. They're petty.
Yeah. They're angry.
Yeah, because it's a Borg queen, man, and she is pissed off, and like, she has very clear emotions about the whole situation. She just wants Starfleet to burn. They don't want to assimilate Earth. They want to wipe it out to send a message.
That's how far they've come, you know, from the old days of assimilating everything. They just want to burn everything to the ground, everything that Starfleet touches. So,
But fortunately, they go to the ship museum. They take a rebuilt Enterprise D, and they go save the day. They take Picard's son back. They stop the signal, blow up the Borg Queen for the fifth time.
Yeah.
And then like, at the end, 709 becomes the captain of the Titan, which then becomes the new Enterprise G, followed by Q showing up at the end, which probably confused quite a few people.
Yeah. It was quite something. Seeing Q again saying, yes, Picard's trial had ended, but yours is just beginning. I'm like, oh, come on. You guys mess with this guy too?
He has a thing for the whole Picard dynasty, I guess.
Yeah. But great was it to see the Enterprise D in action for the last time?
Okay. All I got to say about seeing the Enterprise D on this show was like, wow, the lighting is so much better on the D.
I know.
Like, I can actually see what the fuck is going on compared to all the other, like, ships. Like, all the other sets, something looks wrong. Or, okay, I was talking about this last night with a friend of mine, is that the Enterprise D, a bridge, looks like a show made for like the 90s and such, whatever, the 80s and 90s. So that looks fine. I think the best version of the 90s bridge was on Voyager. For being on TV, because it had depth, but it was also well lit and looked like someplace that's comfortable to work.
Yeah.
Because I swear to God, if you're always working on the end, even like when you see it for the first time, the Titan, like the lighting is so drab and moody and trying to be dramatic that like it just doesn't feel natural. Like, how do you even see half the time in there?
Well, maybe, you know, because Seven is not the captain, maybe she'll just, you know, say, hey guys, I want more lighting in here. You know, just repaint some of the stuff. Just give us a good feel, because it's just way too dark in here.
Exactly. And it's just like, Jesus Christ, because you now see the stark comparison in like two different scenes, you know, like you're switching from the D to the Titan, and it's just like, wow, you can really tell the difference of how dumb this is.
I have to say the biggest thrill for me was on the Enterprise D was seeing all of the old crew members back in their appropriate places. Picard being demoted to field captain of the Enterprise. I was like, finally, it feels right.
Yeah, it's the joke was that, first of all, the woman's voice on the Enterprise D, I forget the name of the actress, but she's passed away.
Yeah.
So, and since the Enterprise D was recommissioned or rebuilt, it's still using decades old information on board.
Yeah.
So to the Enterprise D, Jean-Luc is still a captain. I will happily take this field demotion. But it goes back to what Kirk told him. Never leave the bridge. Never let them promote you.
Yeah. And I never felt that he felt comfortable being an admiral. It was like, this is where you belong as a captain.
Yeah. He got his one final hurrah.
Yeah.
And let's be honest, that whole fanfare scene, the whole old school cast brought back together, that was great. But yeah, you see, I think that's why season one and season two failed so hard, in my opinion. I remember they kept trying to push to bring back Patrick Stewart, but Patrick Stewart was like, okay, here's my stipulations. I don't want to be on the Enterprise. I don't want to wear a uniform. I don't want this. I don't want that. This is a Picard show, not an ensemble show.
Yeah.
So, but from what he sat down with the rest of the cast, he invited them for dinner, and he told them about all that. And like, yeah, you know, they were all fine with it. It was like, whatever. But because of all the stipulations that he put in on the first two seasons, I really feel it took the heart out of what made Star Trek, Star Trek.
I can agree with you on that, because they were stepping away from it. A lot of it was very appropriate at the time when it was written, because, you know, it was going through a lot of political stuff, you know, because they were reflecting on that. Understandable, but still, you always have to go back to what really made the show work. Mm-hmm. And I'm very glad that season three gave us that, gave us renewed hope of what's going to happen, what's to come. And also a proper send off to a very fantastic crew.
Oh my God, most definitely. The last shot of them sitting around playing poker one last time, that was great. Just everything about that final episode just hit so well. And it's just, you know, I was telling people to write off Picard. Don't bother with it. Like, it's like, I watched the first season. It was like a chore to get through. I couldn't even watch all of season two because none of the new characters were very worth connecting with. And then when you get to season three, it's just like, wow, can we even call this Star Trek Picard anymore? This feels like something completely different.
Yeah, I remember messaging you and saying, dude, you got to watch season three. And you're like, okay. Then about, I think maybe it was a day later, he's like, dude, I just caught up. It's fantastic.
It was a completely different show. Like, it's night and day. And the other thing that was annoying is like, what happened to the Girardi Borg?
I don't know.
The Borg Cooperative, which was introduced at the end of season two, and was apparently made provisional members of the Federation. You think they would be relatively important considering the Borg are back?
I don't know. I don't know. That's something that's way beyond our, you know, thought.
Yeah.
Maybe the real Borg killed the Girardi Borg, maybe?
Apparently, from what I was reading, is that the Girardi Borg are still at the new transwarp conduit, like watching it. So they're like way too far away from what was going on in Frontier Day to even know what was happening. Which I can kind of get, but it's one of those like you introduce this whole new faction of the Borg, and you did nothing with them in the third season when your main villain is the Borg.
No.
But you see, that's more of a question of, like, how do I put this? It's clear their focus wanted to be on the Next Generation cast. They wanted to use Next Generation themes, which makes a lot of sense. So you don't really want to use a plot point from season two to finish off your series, but it's more of a, but that just adds to the fact that seasons one and two were written in a way where they were meant to be standalone, while season three is actually meant to tie into the series as a whole.
Yeah. Well, it was a hell of a goodbye, even this is goodbye, because they've been teasing something down the line, but the problem is the productions on these Star Trek shows are just too big.
Mm-hmm. Like, this literally felt like a movie, and I loved it.
Yeah.
I was happy to see this season. Now, if they do another show, I hope it's going to be based on DS9.
Hey, I would welcome that. I would absolutely welcome that, just to see the characters again. Yeah.
Because, there is one thing I was really disappointed by, and it's just a small nitpick. You know that whole, like, yes, and we've discovered a solution to the whole problem with the transporters, and it was developed by Chief O'Brien. Beverly Crusher, fuck you.
I was like, come on. You couldn't at least give him just once. Just
one little cameo at the end. Like, you know what? It was a solution being made via transporters. I would have loved it if they just brought in Chief O'Brien. Like, it's like Beverly Crusher, with the help of Chief O'Brien, discovered who knows changelings better? It would have been a great little cameo to add him in at the end.
Yeah. But c'est la vie.
Mm-hmm. For that DS9 thing. Because remember, according to Lower Decks, Chief O'Brien is one of the most important people in Starfleet history.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. I know, like, they probably said that as a joke, but for people who've watched DS9 are like, yeah, I believe it. Yeah, that guy probably did some kind of, like, techno babble bullshit that saved the world.
Yeah.
All right. But I think that about covers it for our Star Talk for this week.
Yep.
But we are definitely getting back together sometime soon, because there is a lot of nerd stuff that happened recently that's worth talking about.
Absolutely.
So let's just run it down very fast. We got the D&D movie.
Mm-hmm.
The Super Mario Brothers movie.
That's right.
We got Shazam, Fury of the Gods, Quantumania from Ant-Man.
Yep.
The drama with Kang the Conqueror.
Oh, God.
And all of these other new shows that are supposed to be coming out. And I can't wait to talk all about it all.
Absolutely.
All right. So, Ian, anything you want to say before we finish up?
Just go and watch Mandalorian and Star Trek Picard. I guarantee you, it's going to be a very enjoyable times.
Do it. Do it now. All right, everybody. Thank you again for tuning in. And as always, you can find our content on Sierra Nova Comics and on any place you can find podcasts.
Absolutely.
Take care and God bless.
Bye, folks.
Bye.